Morning, everybody. I hope you've slept enough. Welcome to A Way to Fuzzy Democracy, a lecture of the more socialistic part of the Congress. Okay, now you can ask questions later. And maybe first we'll introduce ourselves. My name is Svenja Schröder. I'm a student in Duisburg in Germany. And I study applied communication and media sciences, which is quite interdisciplinary and is a mixture of psychology, sociology, and information sciences. And I'm also working at an informatic institute and at a university in Duisburg. And maybe some words about Christiane.
Well, hello. I'm Christiane Rutten, and maybe some of you know me from yesterday. I had another talk about buffer overflows here. And for my background, I studied physics and mathematics in Duisburg. And now I'm earning my living with working journalistic for Heise Security. Maybe you know about it. And, well, I'm particularly interested in all the systematic and all the informational and that fuzzy stuff we're going to talk about. And let's see what we can make about it. And, well, okay, fuzzy democracy, I mean, you will find that term quite nowhere in literature or on the internet, and it's pretty new. I mean, it's about the idea that modern logic, like one and zero, is very sharp, and there's an approach in mathematics, it's called fuzzy set theory. This approach is much more, well, there's more like clouds. It's not fixed points, it's more like clouds, and this is quite the idea behind direct democracy as well, because if you think of participation of everyone in the state or in a community, you have a big cloud of people acting, of elements acting in the system, and that's pretty much the idea behind fuzzy mathematics as well, and hence the term fuzzy democracy. Well, okay, our first slide, I mean, this is going to be the introduction for the two-parted speech we are going to hold. And the first part would be best described with the best argument against democracy is a five-minute conversation with the average voter.
Well, I'd like to add something.
Yeah, of course.
It's not described. It's something for you to think about. And
okay, right.
This quote is quite useless if you've heard the first part of the speech, so maybe you find this just as a quote to think about as till we start.
Okay. Well, it should pique you into a direction. What's wrong with democracy? If such intelligent people as Winston Churchill are saying these things, I mean. Okay, and the second part, we will be looking at modern communication and how it might change the way we think about and practice politics. So the first part will be held by Svenja, and would you like to tell what it's
yes.
all about?
First we start with an introduction to democracy, about a very brief history of democracy, the idea behind democracy, the obligatory definition of democracy, and so on. Then we'll start to look at the citizens in a state as the center of the democratic process. Then further we'll look at political participation and frustration, and then we'll look very briefly at the connection between new media and politics.
Well, the second part that I'm going to talk about, it's a little bit about system theory and how we can apply to modern systems, state systems and political systems, and as well as information theory. We will make out that information is very much responsible for the relations between the elements in a system. And a little primer for fuzzy theory, how you can think about it and what you can make of it. And the end will be a little closer look at some interesting projects that we already have, that are already out there, and how they can be used and how they are implemented right now to make some fuzzy democracy and direct participation. And that will be a quite extensive part of it. So, I think.
We'll start then. Okay. And then we'll start with democracy. Where does democracy come from? There are the Greek expressions, which I cannot speak Greek, so maybe you just read those cryptic letters. And it comes from demos, which means the people, and kratia, I hope it's right what I speak here, and it's means power, leadership, and strength, and you could translate it with leadership of the people. So and, democracy itself could be defined in the following way. There are two parts. First, the democracy describes a government system where the people have the control over the government ruling over them. And secondly, it's a more abstract democracy is a decision-making process where all participants have the same influence on the voting outcome. It's like could be in your, I don't know, kitchen when you sit around the chair and say around the table and say, okay, what we're going to eat today. Two say meat, three say vegetable. Okay, then you're going to be vegetarians. Okay, and then is democracy equal to democracy? Democracy, and there are very many forms of democracy, as you can see on this slide. Those forms are not nearly all forms of democracy, and we will speak in this lecture of the democracy, but you have to keep in your head that it's not the democracy, but it's that it must be democracies as plural. Okay, now a very brief history of democracy. The first democracy was instituted in Athens. It's called the Athenian democracy. Okay. Later, it was instituted also in other poleis, which means city-states. Those were those ancient Greek city-states. And, it was quite new because, I'm not so very, very used to ancient history, but the poor people said, okay, we will also want to vote and take part in collective decisions, and democracy was instituted because there was a need for governance as collective decisions. So all citizens could vote, not only the rich, with a restriction that all free and male citizens could vote. For today circumstances, this sounds quite
what? That sounds quite archaic, I think.
Yes, but in ancient Greek, it was quite revolutionary, we could say. Okay, this form of democracy, the Athenian democracy, was often criticized because of ostracism. I don't think that everybody knows what ostracism is. It was a process where people could be sent to exile by voting, so everybody could vote, and if somebody should go into exile, and if it was more than, let's say, 50%, the person had to go to exile. That's, not very nice. Okay. So in medieval times, there was nearly no democratic government in Europe, so it was only in some parts of Swiss and other states, but it was no democracy in a whole government in the state. And 1787, the American Constitution was the first democratic constitution, and the USA was the first modern democratic state, which led to a kind of revival of democracy. Okay, and let's come to democracy today. So we have to ask several questions. Is democracy holy? Is it untouchable? And is it the right form of governance? And it seems that democracy today is like a kind of last remaining ethically justifiable modern form of governance. And there are no more contrasting government forms since the end of the Cold War and the end of the socialistic states. So we cannot just say socialism is bad and democracy is good, but this is, we have to ask if we could speak of a decline of the modern if we can speak of a decline of modern democracies, because democracy itself as a government form is maybe not, well, richtig umgesetzt. Okay. Yes, the best. Please excuse my English. I hope you can understand me anyway. Okay, are there any questions so far, maybe? Okay, good sign. So let's come to the idea behind democracy. We'll start with a second quote. Citizen participation is at the heart of democracy. That means that the concrete individual with all its desires, fears, preference and interests is the center of the democratic process, which means all of you are the center of the democratic process and not really the majority. And we could speak of two central concepts, which means participation of the individual and opposition or veto as last cry for help if you are kind of drowned in kind of decision processes which concern you and which you didn't have the opportunity to take part in. So our meaning is that those ideas are best realized by direct democratic concepts. Okay, then the criteria of quality, or what has a democracy to guarantee. There are four major points. First, democracy has to guarantee the opportunity for participation. Okay, that sounds quite logically because otherwise it maybe won't be a democracy. And then the basic principle of civil liberty, which means protection from government authority, which is assured by basic rights and the separation of powers. And a second point is the guarantee for autonomous decision making, so nobody can tell you what you have to think or what you have to decide. As a third criteria of quality, we have political equality, so that everybody has a fair chance to represent values and interests. I have to drink some Clubmate. And as a fourth point, we have an effective and responsible government. And responsible government means that it's responsible for you and it has to be responsive for your welfare, which means social security, and it has to provide safety. Okay, now we come to criticism at modern democracies. Well, you could criticize democracy, modern democracies, in several ways. First, we have maybe low level of transparency of political processes. Then maybe the representatives in a representative democracy don't actually represent their voters, which leads to a low trust in politicians concerning their decision making and their competence. Then we've got a lot of corruption affairs, which at least you can read in all of the newspapers, which is also maybe part of lobbyism. And then we've also got shifting of political public into the mass media and politics as banal media events. Maybe the German of you have seen Chancellor Schröder by at Wetten Das. It's a kind of TV show in Germany, and the Chancellor sat between all the other prominent people and was kind of political actors as prominent people. Okay, any questions so far? No? Okay.
Yes?
Yes? What?
Just a remark. I would say... Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Just a remark. I think the criticism you told us is not only criticism of modern democracies, but of all democracies, because being corrupted is human. Lobbyism is human.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been a problem.
Okay, I'll just let this stand in the room, and we could make further discussions at the end of the slide. Thank you. Okay. So, we have to ask a question. Is democracy wrong? And then we have to say, no, democracy as a concept isn't wrong, but modern democracies need to be improved. So, there are three approaches for reforms. There's first the reform of bottom-up communication, which means the communication from the citizen to the state, very shortly, and it means voting or citizen participation and other kinds. Then there's a kind of reform of lateral communication. This means communication between representative actors and kind of reform of top-down communication, a third point, which means top-down communication means from state to the citizen. And you see, we've underlined the first point. We think that we have to reform bottom-up communication, which means that democracy, or better said, modern democracies need to be democratized. Yes. So we have to get closer to the original idea of democracy, which means we have to institute more direct democratic elements. So a second question is, do modern democracies serve the individual, or do all governmental decisions just serve the majority? And can the individual influence political decisions? So this leads us to the center of the democratic process, the individual or the concrete citizen. So I'll introduce you to the citizens. The citizens, how do they look like? And we can say that there's a kind of cognitive mobilization since the 50s. If you're interested in media, you know since the 50s there is the television, and which means, since the 50s there were more informational resources, and which means higher level of education, and the television as a primary information source, which led to increased political skills, generally more interest in political issues, and in a whole you could say this all led to a political sophistication of the citizens. So, citizens have to inform themselves actively, but they cannot be informed about every political issue. You could maybe see it on yourselves. Maybe you know about the issue you're interested in, but if I ask you, okay, what about maybe whale politics? Do you know anything about this? It's just an example. So you have to say, okay, no, I'm not interested in whale politics. Maybe you are all interested in hacker politics or something like that, security. So maybe this was an example. So there's the question if there is whether there is a split into informed and uninformed citizens. Yes. And in a whole, we could say today the politically informed citizen is a critical citizen. Okay. So I don't know if you're going to vote in your state or if you participate in demonstrations or something like that, but there are some questions, which are why is the voting rate decreasing, or why are so many citizens demonstrating? And the central point of this is that voters have to think that they can influence policy, and if they think that they cannot influence policy, this leads to political frustration. and which means that they feel powerless and not integrated into the political process. So this is getting clearer if I explain you the following slides, which leads us to political participation. There are several ways of political participations, which are basically conventional participation and unconventional participation. Conventional participation is institutionalized, and unconventional is kind of acting out of the system. I'll explain both forms later, more detailed. And you could say that citizens concentrate on forms of political participation which are up to their motivations and goals. Okay, then I'll explain the two forms to you. Conventional participation is traditionally voting, going to vote in your state. And two other forms of conventional participation are campaign activity and communal activity, but I think voting is the most important. So the vote, the voting race is decreasing, and very, very many people vote just out of conscientiousness, not to influence policy. That says that, for example, in Germany, every 4 years, you say, okay, am I going to vote to influence my government? So no, I have to go to vote. It's a kind of, I have to go to vote, but you're not going to vote to influence the parliament. So voting seems to have no direct influence on policy. Then unconventional participation are demonstrations or protests or civil disobedience and so on. There are many various forms of unconventional participation. Maybe I'll explain civil disobedience. It's maybe not clear. Civil disobedience means acting against the law and non-violently because of ethical beliefs. Yes. It's kind of ziviler Ungehorsam in Germany. So in the past, protest was often the last desperate act of the public. Today it's quite common, and it remains a political instrument of minorities and repressed groups. And unconventional participation seems to be more direct and seems to have visible influence on policy. So there's a diagram which I thought you might find interesting, which shows us the forms of unconventional participation. There you see it's very widespread. It comes from a basic unorthodox political behavior to direct action, to illegal action, and even to violence. And so what can we do if voting seems to be ineffective and unconventional participation, leads us maybe to jail? And then we say that new and more efficient ways of participation have to be institutionalized. Okay, then we have to ask ourselves, the people are frustrated, but are they really frustrated of democracy as a concept or government form? And then you can say that the answer is a clear no, but the people are more dissatisfied with current democratic practices. Okay. So what can we do with a nation full of frustrated and critical citizens? The political alienation must be stopped. So if you go voting 100 times and nothing changes, you won't go to vote and you won't be interested in politics anymore. The uninformed citizens have to be picked up. It's always hard to inform if you have no idea what to do, so we have to pick them up and inform them by easily accessible information, and their critical thinking has to be stimulated and supported. Critical thinking is very important. So new technologies have to be exhausted to create new stimulations for participation. So you saw that at the at the television since the 50s. Everybody watched TV, and if there's some kind of political issues in the TV, everybody's informed. So, yes. And we can state that fascination for new media is a powerful motivation. That's maybe because we all sit in front of our computers every day. Okay, so we have to ask ourselves if new media is a kind of last resort. Okay, then I want to say briefly something about the internet and politics. The internet and politics is an interactive process. You sit in front of your screen and you can participate actively. Television is only one way. Maybe television makers tell us another thing, but television is really one way. So everybody is a sender or has the chance to be a sender. There's no need for physical presence. And you have no temporal limits. You can go into the internet 24/7. There's no censorship, okay, in the ideal case. And we think that the internet has a great potential to realize direct democratic concepts. Okay, any questions so far? Yes.
Okay, I think you forgot a very important point concerning the conventional methods mm-hmm. of taking part, of participating, joining or founding a known political party.
Ah, okay.
And I think in Germany we have a very actual, very recent example that it works, the WASG.
Yes, okay, thank you, okay. Maybe we'll add this later in our slides so that everybody can... read this later.
Well, I wrote it just down for the discussion afterwards, and I think we will be into that because
okay.
It's a very interesting point because this is actually what we can do with the technology we have and can really aid. So I just wrote it down. It's great.
Another thing, don't you think it's a bit naive to believe that since the 50s the situation, the democratic situation got better because. Today, if I watch TV, I think I'm getting less intelligent because there's
yes.
So much shit on TV.
Yes.
And I think the broad mass... and I think the broad mass is getting even less political informed through
yes.
that. And sure, my... it's called my society where I act. Most people are informed, but the broad mass isn't really.
There's okay. I'll briefly respond to this because maybe we should discuss really at the end.
I noted it. Yeah. We'll
okay.
go into that at the end.
We could everything okay? Okay. We could state that there's a split into intelligent people and really uninformed people in the media, but this is quite another point. So, okay. Then maybe we'll discuss this later if you are okay with this. Okay, we've noted it. So then...
Oh, another pressing one.
Don't you think that the frustration of the voters comes mainly that, especially in Germany, every important decision, with the one exception of the fall of the wall, has come from the top of the government and not from the bottom of the people? For example, the Hartz IV debate, people went onto the streets in great masses and nothing changed.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cole said, if the dogs bark, who cares?
Yes, we could say that demonstrating in the past always led to a kind of revolution. People went to street to have a revolution. Today, nearly, okay, it's a kind of, yes, it's not everybody, but very many, many people are demonstrating, but not to have a kind of revolution, but to make reforms. it's kind of more common today. And this kind of trend, and so this is why it seems, compared with the past situation of demonstrating today, doesn't change anything. Okay. Is this okay as an answer? Okay.
I think we'll pick that one up for the end as well. Yes. I mean, we would love to discuss this because it's quite interesting what you said about it. Maybe one point to kind of hold back. I mean, I'll write it down. Otherwise, I will continue with the next part then.
Yes. Okay, then it's Christiane's turn.
Okay, let's go a little bit into system theory and what we can make of it, because it's quite a universal instrument to think about nearly everything, as we will see. And basically, the idea behind system theory is, like Aristotle said, the whole is more than the sum of its parts. And, well, so let's look what this whole is about. I mean, it's a definition of a system, and a system is a set of elements and their interrelations comprising a whole, such that the whole is more than the sum of its constituents. Well, constituents is just another word for the elements in a system. And there's one thing to note about the elements, because the elements of a system, they are systems as well. And this is more like a recursive definition of a system, but it really works if you think about it. And this whole that Aristotle noted some 2,000 years ago, that forms more in it, it's quite a finding, and this is called emergence. And emergence is something like that that cannot be explained by the constituents alone. And the emergence must stem from the interrelations between the constituents. And one word on systemical evolution. And any system to be able to exist must differentiate against the environment. And there's no other opportunity for the system than to interact with other systems. And interestingly, as the constituents are systems as well, this holds true for the constituents. So the other way around, the interaction of any systems will lead to differentiation. It's how it works, and you can see it in any physical system if you think about it. And such you can say that differentiation and systematical interaction, they are like hen and egg. You cannot actually distinguish them. Now it's a bit of information theory, and you can say that a sender never really can transmit a message as he meant it to the receiver. And you can split it up into that a sender actually creates potential information. And this is some sort of definition, because you can just produce words or sentences and so on. And it's just a question, what does the receiver make of it? So it's a question, how does the receiver interpret my potential information? And this will be according to the receiver's own level of differentiation. Well, you can say by the knowledge or intelligence or whatever you may think of the receiver. And actually, the receiver will learn from and will learn by improving its ability to differentiate. And forget about the B at the end. So you can always say that transmitted information, the actual transmitted information, is just a subset of the potential information that has been created. And you will always find reduction in such a process. So generally, this is a very simple model of the communication in the modern representative democracies. You will find that almost any political discussion takes place between the representatives, and that's where the criticism of lacking transparency comes in. Actually, there are media reports back to the people, but that is very selective, and the people can communicate with the representatives by just voting, or maybe by referendum, but that's quite seldom a case. So we can actually see how this reduction of informational flow will have an effect on that, because like I said, the voters in the system, they communicate by casting votes mainly, and petitions are rather uncommon, and other forms of direct participation in a conventional way. The communication backed by the media, it's usually suited for the broad interest, and those people with special interests and interest for special content, they must actively go around and search for that, and that's quite a lot of work, and so this step must be easier, I mean, to get to the information you really want. And there's even more reduction in the communication between the people and the representatives, and actually within the communication of the representatives as well, because usually the information that you gather and that are really there, the potential information, it gets reduced. It's like a 49% no and a 51% yes, it will be reduced to a simple yes. And that's just a reduction of information, and it takes place anywhere. And that's really bad if you want to see that information flow is really the key point to all of this. And this is a point where fuzzy logic actually helps. We will see a bit about that. So the information flow, if it's reduced, so from a systematical point of view, you will see that the interrelation between the elements is reduced within that system. And quite funny about this systematical view and system theory is that you can really apply to everything. I mean, it holds, of course, true for material systems, as any physicist will tell you. And it becomes more and more clear that it works even for states and for even psychological processes. And states and international companies are interrelated systems. On the other way, they form the constituents of a larger system with an emergence, of course. You can go into the states, which are constituent of governmental organizations, non-governmental organizations, and companies, communities, and the people voting in them. And it's just a point of view. It's quite relative, everything. And you can go down to political parties. They are constituted of the people in it, and so on. And it goes down to the level of atoms. And doesn't it? Okay, then take that one for... Do you want to state something on it? Okay, great. That would be cool. Okay, great. Yes, thanks. It's actually a good point. I mean, okay. As I said, there's fuzzy logic about this. What's behind it? I mean, fuzzy logic is nothing more. It's a subdivision of fuzzy set theory, actually, and. Basically, it expands the Boolean logic we all know from a simple set of 0 and 1 to the whole interval of 0 to 1. So it's a much broader range. And if you think about it, there are so-called norms for relations between the elements in such sets. Like, you cannot really state a human is old or something like that. You will have to be fuzzy about this because some are more old than others and so on. So... the Boolean logic usually fails with such problems. And on the other hand, if you have got localized decisions and you want to make sure that only those people who are concerned have a really highly weighted vote on it, you can put such a function as it's right there on the side. You can then just say, if you're very near to Berlin or something like that, you will have a high... Well, it's very true that you are near Berlin, so you have high weight in a decision. And by this way, you can construct nearly anything about those relations. And with those norms and relations, you can build very simple sets, actually, of messages. No, it's not messages, it's Aussagen. I just say it in German because I just missed a word here. It's just simple. Thanks a lot. It's expressions. There are simple expressions like if A and B are C, then D. It's nothing more like that. But they operate on fuzzy and changing input variables. And these systems, they are called expert systems. And you can do great things with that. Actually, your favorite washing machine does it. And there are a lot of technical uses for that. And some companies run their whole production line on fuzzy theory and this fuzzy logic. And basically, if you make such norms and expert systems, these are pretty well subject to political debate. You can debate how it's better to put the function you see there. You could shift the curve to the right or to the left or whatever you think is right. That could be part of the political discussion and debate and put it on the vote. So I think there are some lessons learned from the theory behind this. And to put it a little bit scientifically, you can say any sufficiently interrelated constituent has direct influence on the system as a whole. It's something you can learn from system theory. And most people will know this as a butterfly principle. And butterfly's wing flap will cause thunderstorms somewhere else in the world. And you can also say that direct democracy really serves the individual in it, if it's under the condition that it's highly interrelated into the system. So to turn all this around, if in a state or a community the interrelation of people as constituents is reduced because they just can vote every 4 years and there's no communication back, the needs will less and less influence the system differentiation and evolution. Yeah, more lessons learned. You shouldn't reduce all the votes you have and all the decisions you make just to a simple yes or no. You should remember what it actually was distributed like. And basically, this leads to, if you take them as variables into your expert systems, that you can change them at any time. And also, these results, they actually are reusable, because if they change from time to time and anybody can change their vote on something, you will have direct influence on any system that's actually in place. That's if you make expert systems from all that. It's pretty neat, actually. There's, of course, lots of more to be learned from that, but I cannot think of anything right here, anything more right here, and it would be part of discussion or something like that. But basically, one can say that one of the key findings is that information flow and communication is the key to system evolution. And the good news about all this is that we're already pretty good at communicating with the internet and so on. And at this point, I'm going to introduce some of the projects that I found on the internet and that were brought to me and that can be used for political participation. One thing that I came across it is called Devotee, and that's the Debian voting engine. I mean, most of you will have heard of the Debian project. It's a Linux distribution that's produced by a free developer community, and they have developed a voting engine, and you can find it at debian.org/vote, and it's based on open communication over mailing lists that anybody can actually subscribe to. And even anybody, without any restriction, can make proposals. That's quite interesting about it. And to actually have this taken by the Devotee engine, you need to have supporters within the rows of the developers who actually can vote on it. But basically, anybody can make a proposal. Then there will be an open discussion over the mailing lists for at least 2 weeks, and then the proposer can any time call for a vote if you think it's fit. And in the end, only developers are elective, and it's quite okay because you need to have some sort of limit to the people voting to this, because it's a very special project. It's just a Debian Linux project, and so it's quite okay to not have anybody vote on it. Basically, they work on the Condorcet method for the candidate voting. I don't think I will go into that. Just note it if you don't You can look it up on the internet, what it's actually about. It's like a system for how to get results from the votings. There's another interesting project that was brought to me by mail. It's called the Democratic Experience. It's demx.org. And they've got quite a new quite a new way to go about this. They say just ask everybody on everything and see what it's going to be. And anybody in the system who takes place can open a vote, or they call a question, and anybody can add answers to these questions. And at any time, you can change your vote into what you ever think is good in the course of the discussion. And in the end, you will have a system that is in a flux and that will produce the voting results just as they as they develop over time. You can see them changing, actually. And they too use the Condorcet method for making something from those votes. And there's one specialty to all this, because all the all the discussion that is needed for decision finding and for voting and so on, they're external. You have to arrange something over mailing lists and forums and so on. And of course, there are much more projects. I just don't have time to search for them, and I don't have all the time to present them right here. There are plugins for PHP BB, and there are really lots of things going on, and it's quite interesting to look at them. Let's go into some techniques that we already have that can aid our communication in political systems. It's just the RSS feeds or Atom feeds or whatever you are using, because they give you the ability to subscribe for proposals and discussion thread and votes and whatever you like. I mean, according to your expertise, if you're good at mathematics, you will go to statistic people or something like that, or if you're good at, at healthcare, you will go into that sector and just take the information you really want, and it will come to you, actually, and that's a great deal, I think. What you need for this is a proper tagging. I mean, usually you just get the RSS feed from a blog and you get everything in, but it needs to be properly tagged so you can actually choose what information comes to you. RSS feeds can be very perfect within combination with the slash dot principle, which I will tell you on the next slide, to minimize the amount of text you have to digest. And just, we will see in the next slide. And what is very interesting about this is the point that you don't need to be physically present at some discussion rooms or whatever the actual politics today take place in the Bundestag or wherever. You can do your politics in the evenings and free time, and just a bit of politics, but if you have lots of people doing a bit, you will end up in having more. That's my thesis on this. So what's about the slash dot principle? Slash dot, it's www.slashdot.org. I mean, most of you will know this. It has a very advanced discussion rating on it. And only those postings above your personal threshold are actually displayed directly. And you have to click through to all the postings that are below your threshold. And all the information is there. I mean, and the people can tell the most stupid things in there. And it's quite funny to see that the mass of the people reading this are actually able to distinguish between good postings and bad postings. And good and bad, I mean, you might see it in the Heise forum, usually means, yeah, that's my opinion, and no, that's not my opinion. And there's no good in going through a discussion just slashing around with opinions. So if you look at Slashdot, it looks quite different. You will see the informative postings up there and not those who are bragging for opinion and so on. And so this supports a thesis that the mass, actually, if you let them vote on something, they will find something okay about this. And I think, and this is actually my personal proposal, that most people, even the undereducated and so on, when they take part in discussion, they can distinguish between good discussion and bad discussion, and between good arguments and bad arguments. Okay, and the Slashdot principle, it's quite expandable if you think about it. They are quite simple right now. They've got informative, funny, and what was, I think, one or two more categories. You can put much more categories into that, like spin doctorness, like making opinions and so on, and like expert level if you have to go into a higher education, go through a higher education to follow the discussion and so on. You can extend it as well by a proper tagging system that it right now lacks. That means you can have all the tags you want and you can just take those tags that you're really interested in. They've got something like that on a higher level. They've got branches of the whole Slashdot system, like techniques and communication and social stuff and so on. But you can make it even on a lower basis. If you are discussing with many, many people, you will want a proper tagging system. Okay, I have to hurry up a bit. Okay, what's about the Slashdot principle is the personal preference for scoring. You can just say, hey, I want all the expert level discussions because I'm highly educated, or I just want the funny ones because I want to laugh in the evening. So that's a great thing about Slashdot. So there's more that we already have. It's PGP and new PGP, the open implementation. It's just for digital encryption and signatures. And you can actually use it for a secure cast of votes. So that if you want not anybody to have the ability to vote, you will just accept those votes which are signed with a key that you trust. And you can actually make this, you can make partisan involvement through a centralized signature system. That means if you want to be able to vote in a discussion or within a party or within your community or whatever system you're in, you will just have to get the right signature on your key and there you go, and then you can take part. And there's one more way to build this involvement. It's a web of trust. I mean, if I trust you for my party, I will sign your key and then you're in. Or maybe you need two signatures or whatever, you can think about it. You can build webs of trust and you can build trust chains. And that's quite interesting because if there's any misuse about this, you will see where in the trust chain it happened. If there's a really, maybe you have got 10,000 people in such a web of trust and you will only have 5 or 10 people who really want to do bad things with it and go and play around with it, you will actually be able to trace it back and cut the trust chain right there where you think it's a problem. You can make that a debate. So what are the problems with the modern communication? Basically, if you have anybody discuss on anything, you will have non-experts discuss with experts and that will usually go very wrong. But those expert systems can partially solve that. I mean, those experts will be able to build pretty cool and pretty nifty expert systems and you will just put the votes in there that are cast by the people that are not so very much involved into the higher level decisions. But in the end, everything is open. I mean, it's built in such a system. Yeah, everybody can see anything. I mean, you could start trying with encryption, but usually that will fail anywhere, somewhere. And this transparency, it might help manipulation. On the other hand, you have the ability to make network analysis on it and gather quite a lot of information on the people in there. And the built-in transparency, it might be a very big disadvantage in a generally secretive environment. DRM might help with that. But the interesting point is that all this will cease with the prevalency of those open systems. I mean, if anybody is open, there will be not much an advantage to the openness, to the secretiveness. Basically, there's a technical dependability. Like on the internet infrastructure and the computers we have, and we inherit all the problems from that, like denial of service. And you will have to really look for fallbacks and redundancy in case of the people are coming with their botnets and just want to make a denial of service on you, and there your political system goes. It's a bit tricky, I guess. Actually, in the technical stuff requires internet access and right now some decent technical skills. And in the end, it's a lot of work to implement a really usable system. So what to do? Let's start small scale. I mean, make your local CCC act in such a way and with such a system, or make your party that you think it's good, make it based on some systems that you think that work. Use it for your local club or small company or your interesting group or wherever you think it's fit. Let's just play around with it. I mean, it has to start somewhere. And then just grow bigger by creating new interrelated systems for it. I mean, just many small systems, if they interrelate, they form a big system with, well, some big emergence. I mean, we will see what that's going to be. So
maybe this is also described by the term grassroots revolution. I don't know.
Well, and in the end, we'd like to say thank you for attending this year. I mean, lots of people here. Thanks a lot for coming. And I've just put here some literature, and you will be able to get these slides from the pages to this talk. And about fuzzy set theory, I mean, and expert system, just ask your favorite search engine or your university about some lectures or something like that. And, well, if you would like to stay, we would have time, a little time for discussion. Thanks a lot.
Maybe is the next lecturer person here already, or okay, then maybe we can have a short discussion. So please.
Well, one problem I see with your approach to democracy and fuzzy democracy is demographics in our highly developed countries. We have a very large number of growing old people, and the normal democratic processes don't grasp them really, because the older people get, the more they tend to vote in favor of a status quo. And so even if we have a highly informed community, that doesn't mean they vote in favor of logical or to the favor of the whole community.
Well, actually, that's a point that I was quite surprised by when you look at Slashdot. There seems to be some emergence from these systems that actually make it work. I mean, it's not really explainable. We have to try it out. It's a good point about this person. But
and that's also where the old people are also a group of people who have to pick up and for which the government is really responsible. Because the government is not only responsible for your welfare, but it's also responsible for your autonomous decision-making. And this means it has to provide information. And maybe it could be there could be courses for old people explaining computers and so on. And this is, we think, also one point where a state is really responsible.
But one last comment to the Slashdot community. You have a very specific group of people in Slashdot, and you can just say we have a broad grasp of the whole community as such. It's a very special technical community.
That's the approach. You start small with a small interest group, like your local CCC and so on. And if you start small, you will automatically have those people involved who are really interested. And if you make that approach, you would not end up with a system like a whole state suddenly acting on such an open system. Probably wouldn't work. But if you start small, you will just have that like Slashdot. I mean, maybe even sharper.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make a quick notice.
Yes.
I was hoping for more advanced examples, actually. And I just want to bring some more. I want to draw your attention to mysociety.org, which is really very, very important. It's an organization in the UK which are doing great things democracy-wise with the web. For example, pledgebank.com, which you should really know.
What?
Just have a look at mysociety.org.
Okay. Great. We are just thankful for all these hints, by the way.
Yes, and another addition I want to make is the concept of liquid democracy, which is also very important. And we are still looking for a real good technical implementation of this. So
great.
That's just two remarks.
Maybe one more here. I would like to invite anybody for everybody here who wants to make a discuss on this or whatever into the lounge above, maybe in about an hour. If you find time, it would be great to come there. I mean, I will be there. Will you be there?
Yes, I
okay.
think so.
Okay, because it's really great to have this discussion here. I mean,
just a technical comment. If you use open PGP or something like that for e-voting, my vote will be public and it will not be anonymous. And I think that's a bit of a problem. You can't use PGP for building an e-vote system.
Well, maybe you don't have to use your private key. Maybe you can go to your local civil service and get a kind of anonymized key. So, yes. But this is right. There are very, very many... this is one of the big disadvantages in e-voting. So...
Well, you can, in the end, you can decide if you implement a system, if you make all this information public or not, or if you are going to make it take it private, so that only the people directly involved can access it. I mean, that's a question of implementation, but in the end, that's just a problem with it. It's the inherent transparency to all this. But in the end, if almost everything is transparent, of course. There's a problem to this, but maybe it's more important to have a working democracy. I mean, you have to weigh it. What's more important to you? I think I personally would choose the better democracy in that case.
Yes, but it's also important to have an anonymous vote.
Yes.
In the yes, but not with PGP only.
Of course, there's more to it. Okay, I would say let's free the room for the next speech.
Yes.
And maybe an hour up above in the lounge, and would be happy to see you there. Thanks.